Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Tainus Daf Chof Aleph. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur at the top of Daf Chof Aleph. On the side, we have a Mivneh heading, a structural note, where we will be employing a firebox marking, one of our rare markings, but when you have a long section of Gemara that centers around a specific name or an idea, so this marking may be used as a heading. In this case, on this Omid, we will basically be dedicating ourselves to two Maisim. The top you can see Ilfa and Rabbi Yochanan, and halfway down the page you can see about the fourth of the wide lines of Gemara, you can see Nochum Ish Gamzu, likewise, in a firebox. The first Maisa is of remarkable importance when it comes to the centrality of the study of Torah and the dedication to it thereof. We also, by the way, have a long marking indicating the length of the Maisa. You could see that to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. The Gemara. Ilfa v'Rav Yochanan havagar sivo raisa. These two gentlemen were learning Torah. Dechika lehu milsa tuva. They were experiencing severe impoverishment. Amri, they decided between themselves, Nekum v'nezel, v'nevid iska, let us arise, get up, and engage in some type of commercial activity, unekayim benafshin, and thereby fulfill in ourselves the pasuk that says, Efes ki lo ye b'cho evyon. They took the pasuk to mean that one should avoid being in a state of impoverishment. In other words, that one should not experience impoverishment. If he feels that he can get out of it, he should do so. Azlu osivu tusi guda re'ia. They sat under a wall or next to a wall that was of a hazardous, shaky nature. Now this marking, the crown marking, we started in our previous shiur, Daf Chof, where we had a number of cases involving a situation of something that was hazardous, that was flimsy, walls and structures like that in our previous Daf. So we felt it's of some significance to continue this particular marking, and it may very well be that these stories are here because this theme continues here and also in the Nochum Ish Gamzu story. So they were sitting by a wall that was shaky. Kihavu kachi rifta, as they were breaking bread or having their meal, osutre malachi ashoris, there appeared two service angels. But they didn't necessarily appear in a perceptible fashion, but they were present. Shamei Rabbi Yochanan, Diomar Chad L'Chavrei, Rabbi Yochanan heard that one was saying to the other, Nishti Olayu Haiguda, let us cast upon them this wall, V'naktilinhu, and kill them. Shemanichim Chayoilum Haba, V'oiskim B'chay Shah. They left their Torah learning. These are two people that were engaged in intense, serious Torah learning, and they left it. It's described here as they left the opportunity to earn the world to come for Oiskim B'chay Shah, and they're dedicating themselves to commercial activity, which is something that preserves a person in this world, which is considered temporary, Chay Shah, temporary, fleeting. Omar Le Idoch. So the other service angel, the other angel said, Shavkinu, leave them be, Deiko Behu Chad, Dekaimo Le Shata. There is one of them Rashi says, "Kaima leishata osud lizgavil ve'ein zmanu lomus." One of them has a future ahead of him where he's going to grow, become great, and his time for death has not yet arrived. Rabbi Yochanan shama ilfo lo shama. Rabbi Yochanan heard this conversation, and Ilfo did not hear anything. Amar le Rabbi Yochanan le Ilfo. Shama mar midi. Rabbi Yochanan asks Ilfo, "Did you hear anything?" Amar le lo. No, I didn't hear anything. Omar, so Rabbi Yochanan said to himself, he figured, midishami ano v'ilfo lo shama, from the fact that I heard and Ilfo did not hear, shma mino, that therefore I can conclude, lididi kami kaimo li shaita, that it is me that has this great future ahead of him. Omar le Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan said, Ihader, I'm going to go back. I'm not going to continue on this commercial venture. V'uki benafshoy, and fulfill in myself, ki lo yechdal evyoin mikerev haaretz. Impoverishment is not something that will completely cease. And therefore, if I have a mazel, we'll say, of impoverishment, then so be it. Rabbi Yochanan hadar ilfo lo hadar. So Rabbi Yochanan departed. He went back to his Torah learning, and Ilfo did not go back, but rather continued on the commercial venture. Ada osa ilfo molech Rabbi Yochanan. By the time Ilfo eventually completed his commercial activities and he came back, Rabbi Yochanan had already become the Rosh Yeshiva, had already become the head of the Torah center. Omru lei, the people of that location, they said to Ilfa, "E Yosef Mor Vigoris, if you would have remained and studied Torah, lo have a molech mor, Rabbi Yochanan would not have been appointed the head, because you were greater in Torah scholarship than Rabbi Yochanan. You would have risen to a higher level." Ozal tola nafshe beiskaria desfinta. So Ilfa went up to the top of a mast of a ship. Omar and Ilfa declared, "Iika de shoyel li b'masnisa de Rabbi Chia v'Rabbi Oshaya v'lo pashtin ole mi masnisin nafilno me iskaria de svinta v'tavona." Now Ilfa was a greater scholar. In other words, he had greater learning potential. But not only that, But Ilfa is claiming that I am still more learned than he, and you can see Rashi says this: "Deshoyoli klomar afal gav de avdi isko." Even though I did go off to engage in commercial ventures, garisno ano tfei mine, I still learned more than he. That's a phenomenal declaration on his part, that here Rabbi Yochanan engaged in full-time Torah study and Ilfa did not, and yet Ilfa is saying that I still made greater progress in the learning that I did do than he, Rabbi Yochanan, had accomplished. So now we'll go over the Ilfa claim again, and he says, "If there is anyone that will present to me or ask me a question from a source that we call Brisis, Tanaic literature that was edited by Reb Chia and Reb Oshia, who were students of Reb Yehuda HaNasi, the compiler, the editor of the Mishnayos, and if there's anyone that will present to me one of their Brisa, Tanaic sources, and I won't give them, v'lo pashtino lei mi masnisin, and I won't answer their question based on a Mishnah that parallels those brises, in other words, that I will show a source for the brisa that's presented to me from a Mishnah that's edited by Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. If I can't do that, in other words, if I can't give a source for whatever's presented me from Brises, and give a source from Mishnayos, nafilno miskaria desfinta, I will fall off or jump off the top of the mast v'tavana and drown. In other words, he's putting the entire community to a challenge to the death. Also, husaba, someone came along, and Tonale, and said, "Well, I'm going to put you to the challenge." And he says, there's a brisa that says the following. And now this brisa describes a person who's on his deathbed and has a personal fortune that is to be inherited by his sons, and he states his will. And there are three different possibilities that are presented here, and we've numbered them Aleph, Beis, and Gimel. Ha'omer tenu shekel lebonai b'shabbos. He says he wants to allocate a shekel, to an amount of money, for his sons for a week. In other words, a weekly allowance of a shekel. V'hein ruyin lo seis lam sela. There are a lot of children in this family, and therefore they really need more than a shekel to subsist on. They need a sela. So nosnim lohem sela. The court will provide a full sela. After all, these are his sons. They are the heirs to this person's estate, and therefore, even though the father said give them a shekel, we will see to it that they get a sela. Sela is twice the amount. Sela is the name of a coin, which is twice two. It has the equivalent value of two shkolim. The im omar al titnu lohem elo shekel. If he phrases his will, his desire thusly, don't give them any more than a shekel. Instead of the Aleph presentation was give them a shekel, here he says don't give them any more than a shekel, ein nosnim lohem el a shekel, then we will abide by his words strictly and give them no more than one shekel. Im omar, if he should say the following, mesu yirshu achirim tachtehem, that in the event, in other words, that my sons die and I want others to inherit in their stead, in other words, whatever is left I want these others to get, then bein shomar tnu, whether the father had said like the Aleph expression bein shomar al titnu, or the Beis expression ein noisnim lohem el shekel, then the sons, his immediate sons, will get only one shekel. So that's the Tanaic source that was posed to Ilfa. Omar Le, Ilfa said, what was taught in this source, ha, money is, this source is according to Rebbe Meir he. This is according to Rebbe Meir, the Omar, mitzvah lekayim divrei hames. There is a mitzvah, a commandment to fulfill the desire of the person that died. So that what this means, and Rashi explains, that even though these sons, technically speaking, are the official owners of their father's estate, upon his death they inherit his estate. So how is it that they don't just get everything as is, but rather we listen to what the father says? In the event that he said, I don't want them to get any more than us a shekel, that's because there's an overriding factor, a stronger factor, and that's called the mitzvah, the commandment to fulfill the wishes of the dead. Now, it's also explained that in the first instance where he said, give them a shekel, we actually give more than he said, so that is explained in Maseches Ksubis, that, and Rashi quotes all of this, that he was simply trying to mizaris them, create a sense of diligence on their part that they should fend for themselves and not rely strictly on the inheritance. So he said, give them a shekel, which is really when they really needed more. But he didn't want them to become, we'll call them, passive or parasitic and try to fend for themselves. So, but in the second lashon, where he is very, very deliberate in his saying, al titnu lam el a shekel, then we have to listen to what he says literally. Now we continue with the next maisa. Omru olav al nochum ish gamzu. And it was said about him, Shehoya Suma Mishtei Yodov, he was blind in both eyes. Gidem Mishtei Yodov, his hands were, Gidem is a situation where they're cut off, amputated. Kitea Mishte Raglov, and his feet likewise, 2 feet were cut off. V'chol Gufo Mole Shin, and his entire body was infested with boils. V'yamutal Bebayas Ru'ua, and he was lying in a hazardous house, a shaky house. V'ragle Mitosum Nochem B'Sfelim Shelmayim, and the feet of his bed were... The bed legs were in cups of water, kidei shelo yalu olav nimolim, so that ants should not crawl up upon him. After all, he was basically just a body stump with a head, no feet, no arms, and therefore to keep the ants away from him, he wouldn't be able to do anything about them if they would rise upon his bed. So the bed legs were kept in the bed legs were placed in cups of water. The ants wouldn't swim through the water to get to the bed itself. Pamachas hoiso mitoso munachas bayis rua. On one occasion, while his bed was in this hazardous house, Bikshu Talmidov Lufanois Mitoso, Viacharkach Lufanois Esakelim. The students wanted to take him out of that house, and after taking him out of the house, to remove the vessels that were in the house. Omar Lahem Bonai. So Nochomish Gamzu says to his students, he says to them, my sons, Panu Esakelim, Viacharkach Panu Es Mitosi. First, take the vessels out of the house, and then take me out of the house. Shemuftach lochem, I can guarantee you, kolzman shani babayis ein habayis noifel. As long as I am in the house will not collapse. In other words, Nochum Ish Gamzu knew of himself that he was a man of great piety, and that in that merit, the house wouldn't fall on him. Pinu es hakelim, v'achakach pinu es mitosus. They abided by what he said. They removed the vessels, and then they removed his bed with him on it, v'nofal habayis, and the house collapsed. Omru lo tamidov. Rebbe, v'chime achar shetzadik gomor ato. After all, that you are a totally righteous individual, loma also l'cho kach. Why has this lot befallen you? A man of total piety, one would expect, wouldn't suffer in such a hideous way. Omar lahem bonai. So Rabbi Nochum Ish Gamzu says to them, my sons, ani goramti latzmi, I caused it to myself. Shepamachas hoyisi mahalech baderech lebeis chomi. I was once on the road to my father-in-law's house. Vahoya imi masui shloisha chamoyrim, and I had 3 donkey loads of goods. Echod shemaychol, one was a load of food. The echod shel mishte, one was a load of drink. The echod shelmine megodim, and the other was a load of fineries, of dainties, of special items. One might explain that as sweets and desserts. Bo oni echod the omad li baderech. A poor man came and stood in the way, stood by the on the road. The omar li rabbi parnaseni, and the poor man said, give me something to eat. Amarti lo, and I said to him, hamtein ad she'efroik min hachamor. Wait a moment until I get off the donkey and give you something to eat. Lo ispakti lifrok min hachamor. I didn't have a chance to even get off the donkey. Ad sheyotza nishmoso, until he died. In other words, in just moments, that poor man expired. Holachti v'nafalti al ponov. I went and I fell on his face, v'yomarti, and I said, Einai shelo chosu aleinecho yosumu. My eyes that did not have compassion for your eyes, let my eyes be blinded. Yodai shelo chosu al yodecho yisgadmu. My arms that didn't have compassion for your arms, let them be cut off. Raglai shelo chosu al aglecho yisketo. My feet that didn't have compassion for your feet, let them be amputated. Velo niskaro daiti, and I didn't have peace of mind, ad sheomarti kol gufie mole shchin, until I said that my whole body should be filled with boils. Amazing. An absolutely amazing story. What one has to take pause here and wonder what exactly happened over here. Again, superficially, it seems that Nochum Ish Gamzu was very willing to grant the Oni his wish. So what problem could you possibly unearth in this story that would result in Nochum Ish Gamzu saying, I didn't have compassion for him? So if you take out your we'll call it the spiritual microscope and analyze this story, maybe, just as my own thinking, that when you're dealing with a person on this high level, you're dealing with a man you can see as an extraordinary tzaddik, and the Gemara will explain later where we see this, you know, is what the sort where you can see his true God fearingness. What might have happened is that when he encountered the Oni, he told the Oni, "Wait a minute until I get off." Maybe that caused the Oni a certain sense of despair, just the idea of his having to wait, and that instead of saying, "Wait a minute until I get off," he should have, again, we're analyzing this on a microscopic level, maybe he should have just said yes and jumped off the donkey. The momentary pain that may have been caused to the Oni by Nochum saying, just wait a minute, maybe that is what caused him, caused all of this to take place. So, of course, when we learn stories of tzaddikim, of righteous ones throughout the Shas, the issue is this is not the Shas, the Talmud is not a book of nice stories that are just threaded in between the halachic sessions, but rather there's some type of message here. And if that's the message, that one has to try to sensitize himself even to minutia, so be it. So let us gain from this story that level of, let's say, added sensitivity. Even just the casual word, like "wait a minute," and when you're talking to someone that is that's experiencing pain and travails, so one should be sensitive even to that. Let's continue. Amrulo, the students who saw Nochum Ish Gamzu in this very sorry state of being, they said, "Oy lanu shirayinucha bekach, woe unto us that we see you like this." Amar lahem, he says back, "Oy li im lo reisuni bekach, woe unto me if you wouldn't see me like this." And you could see, if you look into the Meforshim, you're dealing here with tzaddikim on an extremely high level, and they were interested in achieving, we'll say, the maximum level of portion in world to come, realizing that if they had any shortcomings in this world, generally speaking, one will have to pay and lose out in Olam Haba. But by experiencing the pain and retribution for any shortcomings in this world, that only guarantees him a total, complete portion in the world to come. So he was very happy that he was able to be seen like this and experiencing this in this world. The Amai Korule Nochum Ish Gamzu, how did he get the name Gamzu, which translates "this too"? The Chomilsa, the Havasalkole, anything that happened to him, that befell him. Kol Milsa comes to include even things that are that are negative, as Rashi says. Kol Meira Afilu Ra, even bad, what one would think is a bad event, he would not view it as bad, as negative. Anything that happened to him, Omar, his reaction would be Gam Zu Latova. This too is for the best. And here we have a story, a very famous story that illustrates this. Zimno Chada, Bo'u Lishdure Yisrael Doron LeBei Kesar. There was an occasion where the Jewish community had to send a gift to the ruling power, the Bei Kesar, the Caesar, the king. Omru Man Yezel, the community asked, well, who should go? It's oftentimes the meeting of the Jew with the Gentile government was something that was fraught with a certain element of danger, of risk. So they ask, who's going to go on this mission to bring the gift to the king? They answer, Yesel Nochum Ishgamzu de Melumod Benisimhu. Let Nochum go. He is a man that is accustomed to experiencing miracles. That if need be, a miracle will happen and things will work out. Shotu biyode mole sifto davonim toivoisu margolius. So they sent with him a box filled with gems and with precious stones and pearls. Ozal bos bahudira. On the way, he slept over in a particular apartment or dwelling, an inn. Belayla at night, komu hanoch diroi. The other people that were there, that were dwelling there, that were spending the night there, they got up. Vishaklinu lisifte. They took his boxes, that he was given, the box filled with gems. They emptied out the gems, umalanu ofra, and they filled it with dirt. Kimoto Hosom, when Nochum got to the Caesar's palace, Sharinu Lesifto, they opened up the box, the Chazanhu de Molu Afra, and they saw that the boxes that he had brought with him were filled with dirt. Bo Malko le Miktolinu Lekulu. The king wanted to kill all of the Jews. Rashi says, uses a euphemism over here, but Lekulu Soneim Shel Yisrael, all of the enemies of the Jews, that's a euphemism. Omar, the king exclaimed, Komechaychu biyudoi, the Jews are making a joke of me. Omar, Gam Zulatova. And Nochum, upon hearing this, he says, this too is for the best. Again, this is something that's so extraordinary. He's there listening to a death verdict issued against the Jews, and he says, this too is for the best. Also, Eliyo Idmile Kechad Minayu. Here we have what we call a Gilui Eliyo. Eliyo Anavi shows up and appears as one of them. He appears like a Roman official. And he intervenes and he says, Omale Dilma Ho Afro, me Afro Davrom Avuhon, who? Maybe the dirt that he's brought is dirt from their forefather Abraham. Dechi Havushadi Afro, when Avraham needed to defend himself or to engage in battle, he would take some dirt and throw it at his enemies, Havu Saifei, and it would turn into swords. Gili Havugiri. He would take some chaff and throw it at his enemies, and they would turn into arrows. Dichti, the pasuk says, Yiten ka'ofer harbo, kekash nidof kashto. The pasuk describes dirt turning into swords and stubble turning into arrows. Havi chavidinto de lomotsu lemichbisha. There was a region, a country that the Romans were not successful in conquering. Bodku mine v'kavshua. They took the dirt that Nochum brought in the boxes, and they tested it out, so to speak. They used it in a military effort, and they were successful and captured that country. Ailo Lebay Ginze, they took Nochum and brought Nochum into the treasury of the Caesar's treasuries. Umaluhu Lesifte Avonim Toivos Umargolios. They filled his boxes with precious gems and pearls. Vishadru Biakro Rabo, and they sent him from there with great honor. Kiosu Bisu Bahu Diura. It seems that Nochum, I don't know if originally he had made the trip on his own, but here the language is in the plural, so maybe they sent sending him away. So he was sent away with escorts, and they went and they slept in that same inn that Nochum had stayed in on his way to the king. Omru Le, the people at the inn said, "My Isis Bahadoch, the Avdi Loch Yakro Kulehai, what did you bring with you to the king that they are providing you such great honor? Omar Luhu, my Deshakli Mehocha Amti Lahosam, that which I took from here, I brought to them. In other words, I took boxes that eventually it turned out were filled with dirt. I brought boxes of dirt over there. So they figured, wow, for the dirt that he brought, he got such riches and honor in exchange. Sasru Lidi Urayu, they knocked down their inn, they closed up shop, the Tinhu Lebei Malka, and they brought boxes of dirt to the king as well. Omru Le Hai Afro the Icy Hocha Mididonhu. The people, these innkeepers, said to the king that the dirt that he brought here is dirt from us. This is our dirt. But kuva v'lo ashkichuha. Well, they tested out their dirt, and it didn't turn out to be of anything of more any more significance than simple dirt. The katlinu lahanoch v'yuroi, and they killed those innkeepers. The Gemara continues with a quote from the Mishnah that dealt with different catastrophes and reason for declaring fast days. Ezehu dever, what constitutes a penalty or a punishment of dever? Ir hamotzia chomesh meos ragli dever. Sometimes it's translated as pestilence. It's a situation where there is a disease. And here the Gemara presents a brisa with some more statistics in addition to that which the Mishnah mentioned. Tanu Rabbanan, Ir hamotzio chomesh meos ve'elef ragli, a town that has a population of 1,500 people. Gagon kvar akoi, like that place with the name that's called kvar akoi. V'yotsu heimeno Tisha Mesim Bishloisha Yomim Ze Achar Ze Hareza Dever, and nine people die over the course of 3 days, three per day. That is Dever. Yom Echad O Bedalad Yomim, if nine people die in 1 day or over the course of 4 days, Ein Ze Dever, that does not constitute Dever. Vir hamotzio chomesh meos ragli, a town that has 1/3 the population, 500 people. Kagon kfar amiku, v'yotzu mimeno shloisha mesim b'shloisha yomim ze achar ze, and three people die, one person on each one of 3 successive days. Arei ze dever. So one person per day over the course of 3 successive days, that would be dever. We continue at the top of Amud Beis, b'yoyim echad obar bo yomim. Ein ze dever. If three people die in 1 day or over the course of 4 days, that does not constitute dever. Now, as we go on in the Gemara, we have a structural note on the side where the house marking appears. These house markings, as you scan down the page, they highlight shemois mekoimois she'ovar aleim tzoros, names of places where they had some type of problem that befell them. So in the first incident, there's an incidence of dever with three people dying, or I should say more accurately, there were three people that died in 1 day. And further down the page, as you skim down into the wide lines, the fifth wide line, you can see in Surah, there was an attack of Dever. And in another incident involving Drukras, there was a fire that broke out. So we have two incidents in Drukras and one incident in Surah. Now we turn to the Gemara. Before we actually learn the text, we have a topic heading that accompanies this story. In this story, we'll see a mifgash, a meeting between Rav Nachman bar Rav Chisda, Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak. These two rabbis, you'll see, meet up. And Ekev Divrei Chochmos Rav Nachman Yitzchak, as a result of a wise point that Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak mentioned to Rav Ekev divrei chochma sherav Rav Yitzchok Rav Nachman bar Rav Chisda menase lishachno lavor mekoymo elov mokum shiachabed oiso yoiser. Upon hearing this piece of wisdom, Rav Nachman bar Rav Chisda tries to convince Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok to change his location, to move to where Rav Nachman bar Rav Chisda lives, because in that location will provide greater honor for Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok. And then we'll see in the Gemara that Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok attempts to respond to that by saying it's not that a place is the source of honor for a man, but rather it's the man that is the source of honor for a place. So that if you're trying to convince me to come over to where you are because the place will be a source of greater honor for me, that's not the way to look at things. Let's now turn to the Gemara itself. Drukras, name of a city, Ir Hamotzio Chomesh Meos Ragli Have, it's a place of population of 500. V'yotsu mimenu shloisho mesim b'yoyim echad. Three people died in one day. Gozar Rav Nachman bar Rav Chisda Tanisa. And Rav Nachman bar Rav Chisda imposed a fast. Omar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok. Keman, your reasoning is based on whom? Now, bear in mind that we saw a Tanaic source just before where three dying in one day is not considered dever. In other words, it's not considered, it's considered some type of happenstance occurrence and not reason enough for making a fast. And yet, Rav Nachman bar Chisda, where three people died in one day, he did impose a fast. So Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok is trying to find a basis for his ruling. So Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok said, come on, based on whom is your ruling? Rabbi Meir. It must be based on Rabbi Meir de Omar. Rabbi Meir says something that in a totally unrelated topic. And the topic is found in Maseches Bava Kama, it's also quoted in Bava Basra, which deals with what's called a shor, the goring ox, a shor hamuad. And the base, there is a machlokes tanoim concerning a goring ox that gores three times in one day. We know that if you have an ox that gores three times over three successive days, so that will establish it as being a shor hamuad. Everyone will agree with that. That becomes a shor hamuad, and that changes the payment scale that is imposed upon the owner under such circumstances. A shor is not, you would say, is an animal that you would not expect it to gore, and when it does, so the Torah provides for a chatzi nezek payment, half damage payment. However, if the animal has established itself as a goring type animal, then the owner has to pay full damages. And that happens if it gores three times. The three gorings, for it to be established as a shor hamuad, would have to be over three successive days. What happens if the animal would gore three times in one day? Would you say that that changes the animal's status, or it's just some type of craze that came over the animal? So according to Rabbi Huda in Bava Kama, it's just a craze that came over the animal. It doesn't change the animal's status. Rabbi Meir says, if over three separate days that changes its status, so three gorings on one day, all the more so will change its status. So now using that analogy, let's first read the words of the Gemara. Rabbi Meir says, Richek Nigichosov Chayov, if it spreads, Richek means distances. In other words, it spreads Nigichosov, its gorings, over 3 days. That makes it obligated, the owner is obligated to pay full payment. Ki rave Nigichosov lo kol shekein. If it gores in a more, in a closer fashion, in where the gorings are, one after the other, in a shorter amount of time, all the more so would you be obligated to pay the full damages. Now, using that analogy, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok was legitimatizing Rav Nachman Bar Rav Chisto's ruling of a tainus when if three people over 3 days is considered reason for establishing a tainus, three people in 1 day is all the more reason for establishing a fast. Now, what we have in our Gemara is a triangle in alternating directions. This we have under our Mivneh heading on the side. This is a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of the discussion between the two people with, by the way, the same first name, Rav Nachman, in order to not to get confused. So the triangle with the point up represents Rav Nachman bar Rav Chisto, and the inverted triangle represents Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok and his response. So we continue. Omer le Rav Nachman bar Rav Chisto, le Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok. Now, Rav Nachman bar Rav Chisto was very impressed with Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok's analysis, and he says, Lekum mor, leisi legabon, get up and come over to us. In other words, what Rav Nachman bar Rav Chisto was trying to say is that by being in this location, you will have greater respect. This place will be the source of greater respect for you, that you deserve. Omale, Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok responds, Tanina. We have a teaching, and now you'll notice that we've put this in a frame, what appears to be a Tanaic source, and all of this constitutes Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok's response. He says, Tanina, we have a teaching, Rav Yossi Oimer, Lo Mekoymo Shel Odom Mechabdo, it's not that a place is the source of honor to a man, Elo Odom Mechabed Es Mekomo, it's the man that creates the honor for the place. Shikain Motsina, we have diamonds here. These are two examples, and we have this under our Mivneh heading. On the side, these are Shnei Dugmois Laklau Sha'odim Mechabedes Hamokim. These are two examples. They don't involve an actual person, as you'll see, but rather involve the divine presence. But it's not that the place is the source of honor for the receiver, but rather the individual creates the honor for the place. And hence we continue with the examples. Shikain Motsinu, Bahar Sinai, we find with Mount Sinai, the place where the Torah, the Ten Commandments were given to the Jewish people. Shekolzman Shashchina Shruya Olav, when the divine presence was upon the mountain, Omro Torah, the Torah ruled Gamat Soin Vabokar Al Yuel Mulho Horahu. The sheep and cattle shall not graze on the mountain, so that the mountain, while the divine presence was upon the mountain, everyone had to be away from the mountain, not on it. Nistalka Shechina Mimenu, once the divine presence left the mountain, Omra Torah, the Torah declares, B'mshoch HaYovel, upon hearing the shofar blast, Heimol Yalubar, everyone can go onto the mountain. Now, it's the same mountain, isn't it? What do we see, though? We see that it's not as if the mountain is the source of honor and awe, but rather it's the divine presence that was on the mountain. Once the divine presence leaves, so there's no need for exercising any awe at that location, and anyone can go on it. We find likewise with the Ohel Moed, the Mishkan in the desert, Shekolzman Shu Notui, that when it was standing, Omro Torah Vishachu Minamachne Kol Sarua, that while it was standing, the Mishkan, as everyone knows, was a portable unit that was carried through the desert during the 40 years of travel, and when it was erect, so that was the place that we'll see the divine presence was located there. So all the defiled individuals that are we just mentioned here, all the tzorua, the mitzoroyim, and other individuals as well that are not mentioned in the Gemara were sent out of the camp. That's because the divine presence was there while the Mishkan was standing. Huglulu haparoches. Once the paroches was the curtains of the Mishkan were rolled up for travel. Hutru zoven v'metzorim likones sham. That very place that they originally couldn't occupy, they could now stand. They could go there. So Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok is inciting this source, is making the point that it's not the place per se that's the source of honor. It's he who is there that is the source of honor. Omar lei ihachi, so Rav Nachman Rav Chisda says back, well, if that be the case, ekum ano the ezel ugabi mar, then I am going to go to you. In other words, I want to be where there is greater honor, and where you are is a place of greater significance. So I want to go to where you are. Omar lei mutov yavoi mono ben pras etzel mono ben mono. V'al yavoi mono ben mono etzel mono ben pras. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok says back, on the other hand, it's not honorable for you to come to me, rather I should be going to you. And here the reason is based on their respective fathers. And that's why in our markings we didn't mention before, but if you go back, use the arrows that you have to the side of the Gemara and go back to the previous arrowed line. Rav Nachman bar Rav Chisda, there was the one was Rav Nachman, the son of a rabbi, the son of a person of honor. The father was honorable, namely Rav Chisda. The other one was Rav Nachman, the son of Yitzchok. You can see his name is not accompanied with Rav. He wasn't a rabbinic figure. He was a common individual. And hence, in response, Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok is saying that's better for the mona ben pras. A mona is a certain quantity, and pras represents half of it. So a mona, the son of half, that's referring to himself, should go to the mona ben mona, the full one who is the son of a full amount. Rav Nachman bar Rav Chisda's father was also a complete amount, a complete quantity in that sense. The al yavo, and it wouldn't be fitting for you, a mono ben mono, the hundred, the son of a hundred, to come to a hundred, the son of a 50. Besura, a new place, havas deverta. Deverta is dever. There was an act of pestilence that befell them. In the neighborhood where Rav lived, Rav was in the town of Sura, and in his neighborhood, this plague of pestilence was not felt. Savru minei mishum zechusei de Rav de Nofish. The people thought that's because of the great merits of Rav that they did not experience the dever. Ischazi lehu b'chilma. It appeared in a dream to those people who thought thusly that you're wrong. Rav de nefisha zechuse tuva ha milsa zutra le l'rav. Rav that has massive amounts of merit, this matter of the pestilence not affecting them, this is too small for him, so to speak. You don't have to bring in the big guns to handle this matter. Elo mishumahu gavro, there is a man in the neighborhood, the shayil moro zavila likvura. He loans different types of implements, digging implements for burials. So because of in his merit that he's kind enough to loan out implements when it's necessary to bury, that measure for measure, called Mida Keneged Mida, that in that very neighborhood, so there was no death. Bedrukras Havis Delecta. In Drukras there was a fire. It was apparently a massive fire that befell Drukras. Ubishivuse, the Rav Huna lo havis leksa, and in Rav Huna's neighborhood, there was no fire. Notice with our markings, what we try to do many times in Gemara markings is to show similarity and balance between one section and another. So here, we've used the dot underline to highlight Shivusei de Rav Huna, comparing that to Shivusei de Rav, just a few lines above. And likewise, with this marking, Savor Mina Bishusa de Rav Huna de Nafish, people figured that it was because of the great merits of Rav Huna that they were spared. And yet, Ischazilu b'chilmo, like we saw before, a dream appeared to those people who thought thusly, saying they were wrong. Hai zutra lei l'Rav Huna. This is a small matter for Rav Huna to handle. Elo mishum hahi itza. But rather, because of the merit of a woman, the mechamemis tanura meir of Shabbos, leir of Shabbos. Again, you see an element here of measure for measure. Here, a tanura is an oven that this woman would fire up every Friday. Umeshayla l'shivuvuse, people who had to prepare their Shabbos meals would use her oven. She loaned her oven for the neighbors, and in her merit, that neighborhood was spared from the uncontrolled fire that befell the rest of the town. We have another marking here, another series marking on the side, under the Mivneh structure, Omru Le. You can see the trapezoid or volcano shape highlights this a number of times as you go down. These are Sidra Shel Eruim, a series of events, Shel Tzoras, of misfortunes. Ubechol Mikre Gozar Tanis. On each one of these, you'll see Tainis was it was instituted. You can see the double underline highlights Gozar Tanisa as you go ahead in the Gemara. Omru le l'Rav Yehuda Osu Kamtzi. Rav Yehuda was informed that locusts that come and destroy crops have arrived. Gozar Tanisa. So the expected reaction is to institute a fast to beseech heaven to prevent the plague of locusts. Omru le lo komafsidon. So the people told Rav Yehuda, you don't need to make a fast either way. We don't want a fast. We don't need a fast. Omru le. So Rav Yehuda said sarcastically, Zavda aisu badayu. Did the locusts bring prepackaged lunches with them that they're not a threat to your crops? Omru le Rav Yehuda. Iko moisno bechaziri. They told Rav Yehuda that the swine in this area are dying. Gozar Tanisa, and he made a fast. Neimo Kosov Rav Yehuda, should we say that Rav Yehuda, in instituting a fast because of the death of the swine, obviously the swine is not something that is really of immediate concern to Jewish people. It's not going to reduce their food supply. They don't eat those animals anyway. So what would have motivated Rav Yehuda to institute a fast because of the death of the chaziri? Should we say because he holds maka mishulachas b'min echod mishulachas b'kol haminim, that a plague that's affecting one variety of creature affects all other varieties, and that really there is imminent danger? No, that's not what motivated Rav Yehuda. Rather, shiny chaziri specifically are different, and it's only because it's that creature that's affected that motivated Rav Yehuda to make the fast. The damyan me'ayu levnei inshi, their digestive system is similar to that of human beings, as opposed to, let us say, cows and sheep that have a multiple stomach system. The swine do not, similar to man, so that if the swine are dying, that represents a threat to man. Omru le l'Shmuel. Shmuel was informed. Now, let's point out, when we need this information for later in the Gemara, that Shmuel was in a community by the name of Nahar Da'a. That was Shmuel's town. So, Shmuel was informed, Ika Moisna Bechazoi. In a distant city called Bechazoi, there is death. Gozar Tanisa. So, Shmuel, in his town, in Nahar Da'a, he ruled that they shall fast. Omrulais, they told Shmuel, the Bechazoi is far away. Omar, so Shmuel said, Leko Mabro Hocha de Posikle. before translating it, basically he's saying there's nothing that's going to block it from, there's nothing that guarantees that it's not going to come over here. Now, Lekko Mabro, Mabro can mean a crossing, a river crossing, and I'm not sure that we have to take it literally or more. He's saying, as we said before, there's nothing, just because it's in one location, it doesn't mean that we're going to be spared of it. There's no crossing here that's going to block it. And you see here, of course, the concept of communicable diseases not being limited simply by simple geographic distance. Omru le Rav Nachman, Iko Moisno Ba'arad Yisrael. Rav Nachman, who was in Bavel, was informed that there's death in the land of Israel. Gozar Tanisa, and he ruled that there shall be a fast. Omar, and he reasoned, Rav Nachman reasoned, in Gevira Loika, if Eretz Yisrael is being afflicted, Shivcholo Kol Shekein, the places outside, Shivcholo is a bondmaid, a servant. If the master is getting, the Gevira is the master, Eretz Yisrael represents the master, if the master is being afflicted, so the bondmaid, all the more so, has to worry. The Gemara asks, Taimo the Gvira v'shivcha. The reason that motivated Rav Nachman is this relationship, the mistress and the servant. Ha shivcha v'shivcha lo. But it would stand to reason that if it were just two places outside of Israel, then there would be no need for instituting a fast in one location when another location was being afflicted. Is that so? V'ha omru le l'shmuel. But is it not so in the story just before? We have little arrows to the side of the Gemara. You can use them to see where we said this just before. But wasn't it in the story before Shmuel was informed, and Shmuel was in Nahardo, Iko Moisna Bechozoi, Gozer Tanisa. There was death in a different location, in Bovel, Bechozoi, and Shmuel ruled that there shall be a fast. So there seems to be some problem, we'll say, with Rav Nachman's reasoning. Because according to Rav Nachman's reasoning, the incidents of Nahar Do'o and Bechozoi would not have been necessary to institute a fast. So the Gemara answers, no. Rav Nachman's ruling is, Rav Nachman's reasoning is strong, that only when you have the Gevira afflicted, then the Shivcha has to worry. Two places on the same par, both in Chutzarts, would ordinarily not have to worry. But the case of Nahardun Bechazoi is different. Shiny Chosom. There it's different. Kevon Te'ikos Shayarto De'lovi V'asyo Bahadei. Since there is communication through caravans, Shayarto caravans that travel from Bechazoi to Nahardo, the disease that's afflicting Bechozoi could afflict Nahardo as well. And that's what troubled Shmuel. But in general, if two places are distant from one another and they're relatively isolated from one another, there is no reason for instituting a fast. Now we continue with a new Maisa, and on the side we have a marking. And we've indicated here, these markings represent Maisim, stories. Number one, Abba Umno, and number two, you'll see on the facing page, on Chof Beis Amad Aleph, on the second of the wide lines, there, with Rav Bruka Chizah, Mirza Shem, that will be dealt with in our next year, but we start here with the Abba Umno story. Now, the Abba Umno story itself lasts till that point, as you can see from the long marking that accompanies this. Abba Umno have osi le shamo mimisifta de rakia kol yoima. Abba Umno had the merit of receiving a heavenly greeting every day. Misifta de rakia is the heavenly academy every day. Ulabaye kol male yoima de shabbato. Abaye, who was for our purposes much more famous than Abba Umno. Umno, by the way, is a blood letter. We'll call it the Shas doctor. So Abaye, on the other hand, And you can see we're using markings that are to draw your attention to the names and to other important details. Abai, on the other hand, received a heavenly greeting, Kol Mali Yom HaShabbat, every Friday. The Rava, Kol Mali Yom HaKippurim, and Rava, once a year, Erev Yom Kippur, he received this heavenly greeting. Abaye had a bad feeling. Chol shadaite, literally a weakness of thought, but he was a type of discouragement. He felt discouraged by the fact that Abu Umna was greeted every day, and he only once a week. And by the way, the same marking that you can see here, this double underline, you'll see later on Daf Chof Beis Amud Aleph, as the story continues, you'll see Rava feeling this sense of discouragement in relation to Abaye. Omrule. So now after Abaye felt the sense of discouragement, Omrule, he was informed, Lo motzis lemevek uvde. You simply cannot do what he does. Now, just a side point, we call this an editorial note. One doesn't necessarily conclude that Abu Umna was a greater individual than Abaye by virtue of this heavenly greeting, but rather the heavenly greeting and its frequency is a result of specific types of behavior, so that regarding specific acts that generate this heavenly greeting, so Abu Umna was able to achieve this more often than Abaye. But in terms of a general picture and establishing who is the greater individual and all, so of course in the final analysis that's something that the Kodesh Baruch of the Almighty takes care of. But as far as we are concerned, of course we know Abaye and Rava as being the greatest of our Talmudic sages, and it would be hard to imagine that someone, a contemporary figure of theirs, was on a higher general total level. Of course, that's my own opinion. That's an editorial note. And as far as, just to repeat ourselves, just as far as generating a heavenly greeting on a certain regular basis, that is a function of certain specific types of behavior. And as far as that's concerned, Abaye was told, you can't do what he does. You can't achieve what he does. You are studying Torah all day and all night, and that's one thing. And that is not what generates this heavenly greeting. What does do it? Well, let's see what Abu Umna does. So what did he do? The Abu Umna, the Chihave, let's read that again. Umayhave Uvde, the Abu Umna, what was the behavior of Abu Umna? The Chihave Ovid Milsa, when he was practicing his trade or his profession of bloodletting, Have Mochis Gavri Luchud Vinoshi Luchud. He placed men in one location and women in another location. Separation of the genders, a demonstration or a practice of modesty. The is lay levusha, and he had a certain type of garment. The is be karna, that had a karna is a utensil used by a bloodletter. It's a horn or funnel shaped item. Through which the blood will be extracted from the patient, and this garment had a karna preset or sewn into the garment. Davis bezia ki kusilta, the narrow end of the keren was pierced the garment like the very very small piercing, like the size of a lancet piercing. A kusilta is a lancet piece piercing. Ki havas asya le itza, have a malbish law. When a woman, female patient would come to Abu Umna, he would have her, she would put this this garment on that had the horns, the already set into the garment, under which would be the woman's skin, the woman's body, and this was all pre-set. All of this was, he arranged for this so he wouldn't ever see the woman's actual flesh. The isle duchto ditznia, and furthermore, he had a private closed location, the shodi bei pshiti de shokil. In this place, was a, we'll say it was a closet or some type of curtained off area where there was a box in which people would place the doctor's fee. Pshiti are the coins, the shokel that he would take. The is lay shodi bay. People who could afford would go to that private location, that curtained off spot, and put in the box the fee. The less lay lo mixif. He who didn't have anything wouldn't be embarrassed. He could theoretically just go behind the curtain, walk out. People would think he paid. When he didn't pay, he didn't have the means of paying, and that would spare them from any embarrassment. And when a Torah scholar would come to him, agro mine lo shokil, so Abba Umna would not accept any money from him. Ubasr de koyohi of lei pshiti, and when the patient, the Talmud Chacham, the Tzum Rabbanan, would get up, Yohiv Lei Pshiti, Abba Umna would give him money, give the patient, the Tzum Rabbanan, the Torah scholar, some cash, the Omer Lei, and tell him, Zil Bori Nafshach, go get yourself better. Now, we should point out that in bloodletting, it was, and you see this in other Gemaras elsewhere in the Shas, that after bloodletting it was very important to eat a very rich meal containing wine and rich types of meat. So, in order to cover that expense, Abba Umna would provide the Tzum Rabbanan money to buy that meal. And that's what he said, go get yourself better. Yumachad shodar Abaye zugo de Rabbonon lemivdike. One day, Abaye wanted to check him out. He wanted to check out Abba Umna. He wanted to check out his piety. This very point is interesting. It arouses a certain level of curiosity of what motivated Abaye to do this, but for our purposes that will leave to you if you want to investigate this further. Also bearing in mind that Abaye had been discouraged by Abba Umna's more frequent heavenly greeting than he himself received. So one day Abaye wanted to check him out. Osvinu, so what did he do? Yumachad shodar zuga derabonon livdike. One day Abaye sent a zuga as a pair of Rabbanon to check him out. Os vinu v'achlinu v'ashkinu. Abba Umna hosted them. He gave them food, drink, and he gave them lodging. Umochluhu bistarki, and he laid out on the floor for them bistarki types of mattresses, woolen mattresses for them to sleep on balelo overnight. Litzafra, the next morning, those very Rabbanon, Karchinu, they rolled up the mattresses, Vishaklinu, and took them out with them, and he took them out to the marketplace to sell them. Vikomu Vinofku Lahu Lashuka. So they, as we said, they rolled them up, took them, and went out to the market to sell them. Vashkichinu, and he met up with them. That is, Abba Umna himself met up with these Rabbonon, Omru Lei, and they told Abba Umna, L'shaimei mor hechi shavu, would you kindly evaluate how much these are worth? Now, this is amazing, of course. Abba Umna is looking at his own mattresses, and he's playing along with them. He's going along with them and giving them an estimate of their value, realizing that they're about to go sell his mattresses to someone else in the public. So he goes and says, "Amalei hachi vachi, they're worth this and this." Amru lei, so they these rabbonim set abuna v'dilma shavut fei, maybe they're worth more than what you're saying. So he says, "B'hachi shaklinu." Well, this is the amount I paid for them when I bought them. Amrulei. So they told him, they are yours. V'shaklinu minoch, and we took them from you. Amrulei. V'matusa minoch, and they continued speaking to him and said, kindly, b'mai chashadatinon. We of course have to point out that at this point they revealed their true intentions, that they had taken his mattresses in order to test him out. Would he suspect them of being thieves, or would he evaluate it at less than their actual value? So they're asking, what did you suspect us of? What did you think that when you realized that we took your mattresses? Omar Luhu, so Abu Umna says to them, Amina, I figured, Pidyon Shvuyim Iklu L'Rabbonon, that you have the need for redeeming captive Jews, V'Yachsifu L'Meymar Li, and you were embarrassed to come and ask me for money, so that you were very pressed to get money to redeem captives as soon as you could, and simply out of embarrassment to ask me directly for the money, you did what you did. Omru lay. So they said, Hashta nishkalinu mar. Well, now that you see that was all a test, take back your mattresses. We only were trying to test you out. Omar lahu. So Abu Umna said, Me'ahu shaita. Aschatinu midatoi litztaka. From that moment that I figured that it was for pidyon shuyim, I set my mind upon those mattresses for charitable purposes, and it's no longer something that I can take back. In general, there's a sugya that deals with the issue of non-stated charitable pledges. What legal status does that mental thought of pledging something, what status does it have? So here, this sukya shows that, as far as Abu Umna is concerned, that once you have a mental decision, pledge for charity, you are bound to it. So he was in no position to take the mattresses back. Well, of course, this shows you a man of great piety, and hence one can understand that because of this kind of behavior, he merited having a heavenly greeting on a daily basis. Have kachol shadaite de rova mishum d'Abaye. And as we said earlier, Abaye had a weekly heavenly greeting, and Rava only once a year. This caused a sense of discouragement on the part of Rava. Omru lay. Rava was informed, Mistayach, it's enough for you to call Magnus Akula Krocha, that through your merit you protect the entire city. So, as we said before in our introductory editorial comments, that these issues are, we'll say, subjective. They don't reflect an entire picture. So one had merits that he received a frequent heavenly greeting, and the other one had merits that he served to protect the entire city. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.